This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 5th at 11:06 in the morning. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like we might be banning the ban on local bans of plastic grocery bags.
Say that five times fast. Let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at the Snollygosters, those shrewd Ohio politicians who roam the halls of the statehouse and the campaign trails of Ohio. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. Coming up later in the podcast, we break out some old technology. Our John Kasich tracking device has an interesting hit this week.
But first, frankly, while things are really hot in Washington with the impeachment hearings, things here at the State House are kind of just plodding along. Lots of important things are in the works, but no real big developments over the Thanksgiving holiday, so we thought we'd run down where those things stand.
You might call them Thanksgiving leftovers.
Yes, we could.
Throw some cranberry sauce on top of that stale legislation. First thing up, guns. We're nearly 4 months since the Dayton mass shooting, and Governor DeWine promises to, quote, do something to strengthen gun regulations. But nothing has been enacted. There were hearings this week on gun proposals. Those include voluntary background checks, the debate over the legal penalty if you sell a gun without a background check, also the expansion of so-called pink slipping, which would include substance abuse as a reason to confine someone involuntarily, which would separate them from their guns. Also, stand your ground, the quote, stand your ground bill that would eliminate the duty to retreat before using lethal force in self-defense. A lot of movement, but not much really happening.
A couple of hearings this week, typical arguments for and against these proposals. The gun rights activists pretty strong that we don't need these restrictions, that the current law protects people well enough, and any change in those current laws would infringe their Second Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. Of course, the gun safety proponents, gun control supporters, were out in force as well. The moms group occupied the first couple rows at least one of the hearings, demanding, again, that lawmakers do something. But all indications are that if they do anything, it'll be very little.
Yeah, and stand your ground laws have been adopted in other states, so I don't, at least certainly to this point, the Supreme Court has not said they violate the Second, that not having them violates the Second Amendment, whatever, that it's not really a Second Amendment issue, at least in the terms of, in the view of the courts at this point. It's just an issue of whether do you think you should be able to shoot someone without having to run away.
Yep.
And that's all that stand your ground really comes down to. It became infamous or famous, however you want to view it, after the shooting of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman in Florida, in suburban Orlando a few years ago. And Governor DeWine has said he supports stand your ground in theory. He thinks at this point the legislature should continue to focus on his wider reaching, quote, strong Ohio plan, which includes the expansion of pink slipping, includes voluntary background checks, which are not really anything at all, at least in the eyes of the law. It's like, hey, you can do this if you want, but we're not going to make you. That really means nothing. I mean, it's really just an olive branch to the gun control crowd.
Yeah, the sticking point there is it is voluntary, but if you don't do the background check and the person you have sold the gun to or given the gun to commits a bad act with it, you could be held liable. Now,
I'd question how that would happen.
It's a matter of severity. How severely would you be punished if something bad would have happened in that gun in a civil way?
That law might pass. I would question how a court could uphold that law. If I sell you a gun and then a year later use that gun to commit a crime, I'm not committing the crime. I understand the spirit of the law, and
but that's
I understand why people want to reduce gun violence. I would question how a court would.
It basically provides an incentive for you to do the background check. Because if you do the background check and the person comes back clean, you're protected from all civil penalties.
That makes sense on its face. I just wonder how that would actually be enforced and if a court would actually hold that up if it was challenged. But no, little traction on gun at this point. And again, this is what happens with these gun debates, that these mass shootings happen. And then if any gun laws get passed, it's in the immediate aftermath. And then if nothing happens after that, it just goes away. I'm surprised that 4 months later we're still having hearings.
Yeah, well, for memories fade. Memories fade from these mass shootings. Mm-hmm. Something else happens. You know,
that's a gross process the way it all happens, right? Lawmakers tend to act when there's public grieving and public mourning. Mm-hmm. And then if they don't act then, they don't feel the political pressure to act at least usually, months later.
But there is something in the works. I mean, there is that petition drive that would ask the lawmakers to change state law to require background checks. Mm-hmm. I believe they have until the end of December. They face a deadline at the end of December to submit their
first
signatures for the first round of signatures. If they have enough signatures and the lawmakers consider it, and if the lawmakers do nothing or don't do any or do something that doesn't satisfy the spirit of the petitions, then they would have another several months to try to get it on the ballot for November of 2020. So that's something to watch in the next couple of weeks to see if that if this group really does go forward with these signatures to get the background check question before lawmakers and then on the ballot, or they wait for another election.
And that would be a constitutional amendment.
No, it's an initiated statute.
It's not a constitutional.
No,
okay.
It's basically that's why you have to. That's why the two-step process. It's basically asking.
I see.
Requiring lawmakers to change state law.
Moving on, also another topic that never really goes away: abortion. And once again, Ohio seems to be the national model for extreme abortion regulations. The New York Times this week had a story with the headline, "They pushed hard this year to curtail abortion, wait for 2020. And underneath that was a picture of the Ohio Statehouse. And the story outlined Ohio's latest anti-abortion bill, the one that would charge doctors with murder if they performed an abortion. Doctors could face the death penalty even. Doctors would also have to try to transplant an ectopic pregnancy. That's where a fertilized egg implants in the fallopian tubes instead of the uterus. There is no medical evidence that the transplantation procedure works, but here we are talking about it on a political podcast because someone has proposed it.
Yeah, and the gist of the story was what we've talked about many times is this sort of race to the right on the abortion issue, the race to get the case before the U.S. Supreme Court, which would completely overturn Roe versus Wade. And like we've seen here in Ohio, this piece showed that some conservatives, some abortion opponents, worry that these cases will go too far.
Sure they
and
will.
And the Supreme Court will not even take up the case, which means basically they would reject the case without hearing arguments. Like right now, Ohio Right to Life does not support this. The leading anti-abortion group in Ohio does not support this latest legislation. They, quote, stay neutral, at least publicly. And they want to stay out of it. They did the same thing with the heartbeat bill.
Exactly right. They came around.
And they came around because they knew
political
they could,
pressure.
They also knew that they could, the chances of it passing in the Supreme Court with Brett Kavanaugh's appointment were much greater. So for now, Ohio Right to Life is staying out of this latest abortion, anti-abortion bill. Does that change if Ruth Bader Ginsburg leaves the court and Donald Trump appoints a conservative justice? Does that push groups to go with this? Who knows?
It seems patently absurd on its face to try to outlaw abortion and charge doctors with the death penalty. But when you view it in the context of solely doing this to get it before the Supreme Court, it makes sense. It's just a vehicle for their cause at that point. It's not whether or not this law is constitutional, because as it sits, it's clearly not. I mean, the Supreme Court has clearly outlined standards for viability. This law violates the standard they have set.
And that's where the rift is. That's
but would they reconsider? Would they take it up again? Because they have done that, especially recently. They've taken up cases that they've already ruled on, that courts previously have ruled on.
Yeah.
It's so they're not necessarily worried about violating precedent. At least that seems to be a less of a concern with the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the theory is, do you go incrementally in restricting abortion up to eventually get an outright ban, which is what the anti-abortion strategy has been for the past 20 years. Some on the anti-abortion movement have grown impatient with that, and they want to go for it all. They want to overturn Roe versus Wade in its entirety right now, and that's where this sort of strategy rift comes. They all agree that abortion should be banned. Anti-abortion groups are honest and completely agree that they want to ban abortion. It's just how they get there and what's the best course of action politically for them to do that.
Moving on to the biggest story by far nationally right now, impeachment. Ohio Republicans not named Jim Jordan are trying to keep a low profile during the impeachment hearings. Rob Portman, like most moderate Republicans, trying to thread the needle here, stay on President Trump's good side, but not so much as to anger moderate Republicans and independents.
Yeah, well, some Republicans continue to insist there is a chance Ukraine was behind the 2016 election meddling Rob Portman this week said he is convinced that it was Russia and not Ukraine. He said, quote, in a conference call, "I believe Russia meddled in a significant way in the election and we should not let them off the hook. That's where the big problem was." So not a whole lot of ambiguity
right,
there.
Right. It's classic Portman as barely breaking from Trump. He's really straddling the fence. Portman loves to do this, to come out softly against something, and he's really hedging his bets here with Trump.
Yeah, he's disagreeing with the president, but not criticizing the president or criticizing the supporters who agree with the president. And, you know, he's co-chair of the Congressional Ukraine Caucus. And the reason why is because there is a large number of Ukrainian Americans in Northeast Ohio. It's a large segment of the population.
The other co-chair is Marcy Kaptur.
Yeah, so it's not a good idea politically back home to be against Ukraine.
Right. I mean, especially when you look at areas like Northeast Ohio, a lot of Ukrainians up there.
So it puts him in a tough position because President Trump does not like Ukraine, certainly blames Ukraine for the election meddling in 2016, which there's, of course, no evidence of. So it puts Rob Portman in a tough position. And he seems to be doing a pretty good job, honestly, politically, of straddling the fence, not angering Donald Trump enough where he draws his ire, but also sticking up for, you know, his Ukrainian caucus and his Ukrainian-American constituents.
The real question here is, are there any committees that Jim Jordan is not on?
Well, he's always been on the Judiciary Committee in the House.
He's a fixture on TV lately.
He was a pinch hitter on the Intelligence Committee.
No suit jacket.
He won't be in the Senate if it goes to a trial.
Anyway, we'll be right back.
StoryCorps shares unscripted conversations between two people about important things in life. Love, loss, family, friendship. StoryCorps partnered with WOSU Public Media to record and share the stories of our city. Recorded here, StoryCorps Columbus preserves pieces of our shared history for future generations. Subscribe to the StoryCorps Columbus podcast now at wosu.org/StoryCorps, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. It has been a while, but we want to bring back our high-tech way of tracking our former governor. Let's crank up the John Kasich GPS.
Ohio, Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck. So,
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
Ground control to Major Tom. Help me. Take your protein pill.
Longtime listeners of the podcast will remember that we used this during Kasich's final months as governor, as he was spending a lot of time on the road campaigning for president or whatever he was doing. We never really figured it out.
He was campaigning for something, and he ended up on CNN, so maybe he was campaigning for that. Well, he is still traveling now that he is a private citizen, giving speeches and getting paid for these speeches. Laura Bischoff, friend of Snollygoster, writer for the Dayton Daily News, recently had a good scoop. She learned that Miami University, over there in Oxford, paid John Kasich $40,000 to give a speech on civility.
And according to the Dayton Daily News and Laura Bischoff, Kasich's contract also called for a 5-star hotel with a king bed and cool water on stage, as well as armed security. Not warm water, not tepid, not hot.
Cool water and armed security. It's kind of ironic for a speech on civility, no?
And for a guy who tried to pass a lot of gun control laws. He wants guns around him.
That's right. Anyway, Miami may have gotten a discount. The University of Florida reportedly paid Kasich $60,000 for a speech back in January.
Good work if you can get it for John Kasich.
Yeah.
This is normally the part of the show where we do our Snollygoster of the week. We were feeling in the holiday spirit. I guess if we had to give it to anybody, it would be John Kasich for spending months talking about gun control. Now he needs armed security for his speech on civility in Miami.
And cashing in on those speeches as well.
Hey, it's a good gig if you can get it. It really is. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, please tell your friends about us and be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.